When today's guest moved cities, continuing her landscape photography as her primary income felt impossible without local connections. She considered the contacts that she did have and realized they were all in the dog world. Combining her love for dogs with her love for nature, Kim Hoschel utilized these contacts to launch a pet photography business. She has tried many different pricing structures and marketing strategies in the last 10 years, and in today's episode, we spoke all about them.
Welcome to the Pet Photographers Club. Tune in as experts share their insights to help grow your business with higher sales, creative marketing, and kick-ass business strategies. Now on to the show.
Hello and welcome back to season 16, episode 4 of the Pet Photographers Club. I'm your host, Kirsty McConnell, and today I'm chatting with Kim Hoschel of Kim Hoschel Photography, although I think you might have a separate name for your dog business, Kim, so let's get into that in just a second. First of all, though, welcome to the club, Kim.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Can you just confirm that for us, actually? Because I think I originally found you through Kim Hoschel Photography, but then I noticed your email address was different. So what's the deal?
So it's Kim Hoschel Photography. And I do have that email, and then I have a Gmail only because, let's be honest, I'm kind of lazy and I already have all my other Gmail. So that way I can just follow those emails quicker. So it just forwards to my default email.
So we got it right and everything is fine. You know, when you're just like going through the motion and then you're like, I didn't confirm that, but I'm going to leave this in anyway. So the listeners know that, you know, we're all human here. All right. So, Kim, let's give a little bit of a backstory for the listener as to who you are, where you're based in the world, and what it is that you do as a photographer in general.
So I am based out of Portland, Oregon, and my photography career actually started a little bit after I had a car accident and ended my dance career. So I needed a creative outlet, and I started doing photography and studied more and more. And I originally was a landscape photographer, and I worked in Arizona for like Arizona Highways Magazine. And I did, you know, some books and calendars for them. And we had a gallery down there. And then when I moved up here, I didn't have those connections anymore. And so I was just like, I still want to be a photographer. And it's beautiful here. I just don't have the connections to get my work out as much. So I decided, since I always photograph my own dogs in the landscape, that I would just pivot and become a dog photographer, you know, basically an outdoor dog photographer.
Okay. We have to break all this down, Kim, because you ran over all of that like it was the most normal thing in the world. And let's just say it's not. So first of all, I'm really interested. You said that your dance career had to end. How come you never photographed dance? Was it too painful?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, because it was really hard. Because I didn't end my dance career on my way. I ended it kind of at the height of my career. I was actually a lead in a show at the time, and I had a car accident. So it was not my choosing, and I went out, you know, in a way that was not what I was hoping for. So it was kind of a painful ending to the whole dance career. And yeah, so for a long time, it was hard to watch dance. I'm fine now, but like at the time, it was just, I was like, I just can't, I need to be away from it all. So
yeah, as soon as I asked the question, as it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, hang on a minute, I already know the answer to this. This was obviously too painful. Sorry. And so, sorry, just to stick with that, because you said now that's okay. Like you've obviously processed all of that and now you can watch and enjoy dance. So when you moved to Portland, were you at that stage yet?
I was. I just didn't have any connections to the dance world up here. So like I didn't feel like the opportunities maybe were as open. So, and I was really like heavy into landscape, just me outdoors by myself and my camera.
So mm-hmm. That totally makes sense. I mean, I'm just really interested because I always say I'm a strong believer that one of the most important things of becoming a photographer is knowing your subject. And I've probably mentioned this on the podcast before, just for the listeners, but a long time ago when I was doing my diploma of photography, we had to do sport as one of our genres. And I tell you, I thought it was the most ridiculous things that we were assigned the thing to have to photograph sport. I was like, what is the point of this? This is ridiculous. But I tell you, it was one of the best learning curves because I chose gymnastics. I don't know why I chose gymnastics because I'm not a gymnast. I know nothing about gymnastics. But anyway, I'm a business person, as you guys all know, and I saw an opportunity to turn it into making money, or I thought, because I thought like all these moms of these gymnasts would want to photograph, like it was amateur, you know, kids gymnastics. And I thought that they would want photographs of their kids, and nobody had ever done that for the local gymnasium. And so I went down there, I set up my lights and I did all my photos and I thought they were awesome. And the moms hated them because they could all tell that their kids were like, you know, the feet weren't right or the head was wrong or something like this. But I didn't know, I'm not a gymnast, you know? Anyway, and so since then, that was the biggest learning for me of, you know, that assignment was that it's really important to know your subject. And if you don't already know it, you should make sure you learn to know it. And so to me, when you said, you know, you obviously know dance really well, I was intrigued as to how come at some point you haven't gone back to that. And I'm interested, Kim, that you've said now multiple times that when you made the move to Portland, you didn't have connections. You didn't have connections for your landscapes. You didn't have connections for the dance. But did you have connections for dogs either?
I did right away because we had a corgi and we have a corgi meetup group that meets every weekend and we have events and there's a big dog community here. So there's a lot of events that you go to and everybody knew Lucas. And so I was already connected to dog people instantly when we got here. So when I was thinking about it, I was like, hello, stupid person. Why aren't you photographing dogs? So yeah, that's kind of how it all happened is I made those connections instantly. So yeah, that's my dogs.
And when was that, Kim, just to give us a bit of a picture?
2013.
Okay, so quite a while now. And 2013, so the dog photography niche was still really early in 2013. How was it in Portland at that time? Was there any established pet photographers?
A couple, but I was doing more for friends and for like our corgi group. So I would photograph the Portland corgi, the Cannon Beach corgi meetup and stuff like that. So I was doing more of that kind of stuff. I wasn't actually official, like, here's my business. I was, you know, I still had my landscape stuff going on, but.
And what about today? Do you still have any income from your landscape work?
I do. It's just not as much because I'm selling more prints as opposed to like selling to magazines and things like that.
Okay, gotcha. And so what's the breakdown between like percentage wise between your income from pet photography these days and your income from landscapes?
It's probably about 80% pets and like 20% landscapes.
Okay. So you're a pet photographer.
Yeah, exactly.
Number one, first and foremost.
Yes. Yeah. I haven't pushed my landscape stuff as much. So it's kind of fallen by the wayside. But for me, my husband laughs at me because I think part of why I stuck with landscapes and didn't go to dance and all that kind of stuff as subjects initially is I am like one of the most impatient people ever. Like, it's going to sound like a silly story, but when you move to Oregon, you realize that you can't pump your own gas. You can now, but when we moved here, you could not pump your own gas. No one could understand why it annoyed me to no end and why I was bound and determined to change that because I'm just impatient. That's who I am as a person. He's like, but you put that camera in your hand. He's like, you are total zen. You'll stand in the same place for 3 hours in the water and just waiting for till everything's just right. So like, I think it was kind of a healing thing for me too. And then because I'm like that with dogs, like that's kind of my zen zone is like, that's when I'm most comfortable and calm.
I can imagine there are quite a few listeners right now nodding their head in agreement, understanding. I'm also a bit that way. Actually, I'm absolutely that way. I'm one of the most impatient people I know as well. I just like, I'm a person that makes shit happen and I don't like to wait for anybody else. And that's just how I roll, just like you. And yet with photography, I'm like not landscapes for me, but my travel work, like street photography, which is just a hobby, just for fun. I'm like crazy patient with that. And also, side note, I'm really scared of heights. Like I can, it's getting worse and worse. I think I need to like seriously get like a hypnotized for this because it's getting so bad. I can't even watch a movie or a film that is like got anybody near the ledge of something. My hands are like wet. My feet are wet. I'm like so scared of that. Anyway, but if I have a camera in my hand, I'm like jumping up and down. I'm like fearless. It's amazing. Yep. I guess that's the same experience for you with your patients.
Oh yeah. Cause like at Horseshoe Bend in Utah, I was like, I was like hanging over the edge. My husband's like, you would never, ever do that if you didn't have a camera in your hand. I was like, you're right. I wouldn't. Yeah. It's true. It's almost, it feels, the camera kind of feels like a superpower somehow. I don't know why, but it does.
Yeah, this is so interesting to hear that somebody else has this same. I mean, it doesn't surprise me really now that I think about it, but I've never spoken about it, I don't think, with anybody else about this superpower camera. So guys, if you're listening and you're there nodding your head, like let us know, send an email or put a, you know, put something in the Facebook group or something so that we know if we're like the only weirdos out there or if, right. or if there's a whole gang of us that are doing this.
Exactly.
Okay. So back to what you said earlier about like you didn't sell landscapes or even consider going into dance once you were ready for that and you moved to Portland because you didn't have the connections. You then told me, Kim, that you made connections really quickly with dogs because of corgis or your corgi brother. But that's a pretty like defined audience. And I imagine today that you don't just photograph corgis.
Nope.
So talk us through if today you still believe that it's that having those initial connections is as important as you thought it was then, or if you just needed something that was like a little bit easy to start and have knowing you had those connections was a bit of a help.
Well, I am a serious introvert, and so making connections can be super challenging for me. So I think the corgi thing helped, but also because there's so many dog general events here in Portland. So like we have an event called Doggy Dash and it's all dogs. And that's how, you know, so I met people through that too. But for me, in any situation I'm in, if somebody has a dog, I find it easier to talk to them. So it's kind of the way I relate to the world is I relate to dog people because usually I'm talking to the dog first and then I talk to the person. So I'm one of those weird people that does that. Yeah. I'm the person that talks to the dog at the party.
I don't think that's weird in this circle. I think we're all a bit that way. Don't worry. You're in good company, Kim. So, okay. I will ask my question again then. So if you were moving to a new city now, and you didn't have connections in the dog world, but you had connections in another world, let's say dance, for example, would you start your business in that genre or would you now start dogs again, even without connections in a new city?
I think I would stick with dogs because that's what brings me joy, and especially photographing dogs outside, because then I combine my love of the landscape and my love of dogs into one thing. So like I, now that I've done it, I feel more comfortable. And because I feel comfortable when I meet people with dogs, like I feel better about being able to make those connections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that. That makes sense, I think. So, okay, let's say with this idea, this hypothetical. So let's pretend, because you have lots of business experience behind you, Kim, both with the landscapes and then dogs now over 10 years. I imagine you've tried lots of different marketing techniques. So if you were moving, and we won't go into the nitty-gritty of this, but just like a quick overview, if you were moving to a new city, you're going to start a dog photography business and you don't have any connections there, what is the first marketing strategy that you would implement?
Oh, goodness.
Only one.
Only one. I know. Oh, I would probably reach out to like a doggy daycare and try and make that connection to reach out to their clients.
So what would your ultimate goal be with them?
Would be to do a couple of events with them or get my images up in their facility to entice their clients to do actual sessions with me. And I'd probably give them like a discount as a referral-ish type of thing, you know, where it's like, oh, if you're a client of so-and-so, you can, you know, get your session for whatever and still get your full credit. Or
so traditional third party marketing, I suppose, is how you would do it. Is that a marketing strategy that you have in place at the moment in Portland?
I do have a couple of those in place. I have a winery that has a dog club and I have a doggy daycare. So I do have a couple of those where they have cards on hand where they can, you know, promote it to their clients and get the word out.
Mm-hmm. And is it your best lead source? Are those two businesses your best lead source?
Not always, no. I've gotten a couple from them, but most of my stuff has actually been through, because I've done the calendar contest twice, and I've actually gotten some good clients from there who have bought more than just like, okay, I'm in the calendar, I'm buying the calendar. Like, they've actually bought like wall prints or albums. So that's actually been a good lead for me.
I just asked because, you know, sometimes what works in our current city isn't what we would do if we were to move, or we would eventually do that, but we know that to get like booking straight away, we have to put in some other strategy, you know, for when we first arrive in a new place. So I was really interested to hear that, you know, that was your approach as well. First of all, you want to make that connection with the, let's say, doggy daycare, get that strategy up and running, and then you can, you know, that should give you some immediate booking so that you can have, you know, the time to implement the longer term ones. I'm guessing that's what you're thinking, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Awesome. So Kim, before we wrap up part one, I've just got a couple more questions to give us a bit more of an overview for what's working for you. Because I did see on your website that you're offering two or actually three different session types. So you've got like a full session, a kind of, I guess it's like a mini session, and then these like destination adventure sessions. Mm-hmm. So I want to get to that third one in a second, but can you just give us a bit of an overview for what those two session types look like and what the difference is between them and why you're offering both?
So I originally offered, I have the two on there, and I'm planning on changing it because I don't like the system that I have. But that was the guidance that I had at the start of my business. So I was like, oh, okay, well, let's try that. And that hasn't worked for me. So my main session and the one I'm going forward with is going to be the adventure sessions, the urban adventure. And basically that is a 60 to 90 minute session, and the $299 session fee goes to product credit. And they can have up to two dogs, family members can be in there, and then it's a location within 30 miles of Portland.
Okay, nice. So traditional kind of photo shoot method, except that your entire session fee is held as print credit. So most of your clients are therefore buying prints and products. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, nice. And so at the moment, just for the listener, you have that as your one offering, and your other offer is like $99 and it's a shorter session. Is that correct?
Yeah. So that's more of it because it's not open all the time. So you can join the wait list, and it's more like I'll open a session up and say, hey, I'm doing photographs at such and such park. You can sign up for, it's like usually a 20 to 30 minute session, a shorter session, less photo choices, and you don't get the full product credit.
And why do you say it's not working? Is it because the waitlist isn't big enough? Is it because like you usually upsell those people to a full session anyway? Like what's the main reason you would say it's not working?
I really haven't had many people take me up on it. And so it hasn't been drawing people. So I was like, at first I was thinking, oh, for those people who, because, you know, I've had people say, hey, the $299 is just too much. And so I was like, well, if you go on my email list, then you'll hear about sessions that are, you know, the $99 sessions. I was like, but then you don't get the credit. So it doesn't, it's not as beneficial for you. So yeah, I mean, I just feel like it's not drawing people in. Like I thought it would, like, kind of fill that niche of those people who are like, oh, $299 is too much. So yeah, I just kind of, I'm doing away with it.
also at the end of the day, if they can't afford $299, they probably can't afford your products. And so then it's not really the right fit anyway, is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think it's great to try all these things and recognize when they're not working. And then like you are, you can just pull it. And I think that's great. Just quickly before we wrap up this half, I do want to ask you about the destination adventure sessions. So are you going to be keeping those?
I am, because here in Portland, we are an hour and a half from the mountains, an hour and a half from the beach, you know, so we're, you know, a fair distance. Like, it'd be longer than, you know, the 30 miles outside of Portland that I do now. But, and it'd be a longer session. So like when I do like a session over on the beach, it tends to be a longer session. We take more time. We stop at a couple locations along the beach. So it's a bigger deal. And it's, I always like it. If people like those destination sessions for people who have like a lot of dogs, because then it gives us more time and more chance to get variety for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to hear way more about that. If you've done any, and if, you know, if you have, what the sales are looking like and how, you know, the most popular locations and all of this kind of stuff and how you're marketing them. But I want to keep that for the members. So what we're going to do is we're going to wrap up part one of this episode now. And in the second half for the members, we will talk about that. I also want to talk about a few other things like your most popular product, a bit more about marketing, and also about the podcast that you host as well, and what you thought you were going to get out of that and what the actual results have been in terms of helping your photography business. But all of that, I'm keeping all that juicy good stuff for the members. So before we wrap up part one, how can the listener find you, Kim?
I am at kimhoschelphotography.com, and that's my main website. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, I'm on LinkedIn, so, and then obviously the podcast.
Perfect. All right. Well, don't worry if you missed anything, guys. I've taken all the notes for you. I've been like super quick jotting down everything we've been talking about, and I'll put all the links so that you can find Kim's work as well all over the place and those places she just mentioned. All of that will be in the show notes. So you can just head on over to thepetphotographersclub.com/the-podcast. Search Kim and you will find this episode, or it is season 16, episode 4. So you can search that as well. That's it for part one of this episode. If you are a member of the club, as I said before, you can continue listening to part two in the member zone or via your private RSS feed in your favorite podcast player. Don't forget, if you're not a member yet, you can join today. It's just $10 a month, and a club membership includes loads of perks and bonus content like the end of this episode. So head on over to thepetphotographersclub.com to find out more.
Thanks for listening to the Pet Photographers Club. To subscribe to the podcast, check out other episodes, and keep up to date, head to thepetphotographersclub.com.